Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. All right, Bill, I thought this was such a fantastic idea, but Louise Brown is rolling her eyes. Yep. I think she's heard this several times before.
We thought we'd do something original, and it came back to bite us, didn't it?
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the stream here on WGN Radio. It's really an honor to meet the world's first test tube baby, Louise Joy Brown. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And America's first test tube baby, Elizabeth Jordan Carr. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I have to tell you, I had an ovarian cyst back in 1983, and I lost an ovary, and I remember thinking, I'm never going to have children. But then hearing about you two, I said, there is hope for me. Do you know how many women you have paved the way for, both of you?
Well, I know there's over 6 million IVF babies, so...
6 million worldwide?
Yes.
Yeah?
Wow. Yes. That's
wow.
I that's hate to amazing. Think how many couples and people they've helped.
Today was the first time the two of you have met, is that correct?
That's right.
All right. Yes. So there are obviously things in common. What's the discussion been between the two of you all day today?
I think we're both just relieved that we finally got to meet each other and understand that somebody else knows what our wacky life has been like.
Yeah.
Because she's really the only other person who knows what it's been like to grow up like this. This is just our life. I mean, you know, yeah. Most other people don't do press all day long, right?
Right. You've both been under a spotlight. I don't want to start a rift between the two of you, but I got to be honest, Louise, you're the more famous of the two.
We're the same.
So, Louise, you are going to be celebrating your 40th birthday coming up in July?
39th
birthday.
40 next year.
All right. That's awesome. And, Elizabeth, do you mind sharing your age?
Yeah, I'm 35.
That's amazing to me.
That it's been so long. Yeah.
And struggles. Have there been health issues? Have there been anything? It's just been business as usual.
Yeah, I'm just completely normal.
Well, as far as we know, anyway,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah.
Nobody's really truly normal, no. I don't think.
But those first few years, those formative years, because you guys were both under spotlights, that had to have been pretty challenging, I'd imagine, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But that was all we knew. I didn't know anything before, and I grew up with people interviewing me, taking pictures, people taking an interest.
Yeah.
So it's... Nor is our lives. That's how we deal with things.
Sure.
So.
Right.
I'd like to pull Dr. Amber Cooper into the conversation. Hi, Dr. Cooper. Your accolades are so long. Why don't you tell us where you work currently? And what does FACOG mean?
It just means Fellow of American College of OBGYN. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, you've all come together for this Midwest Reproductive Symposium that's going to be happening at the Drake Hotel. And the public is invited starting tomorrow. Is that correct?
That's correct. Tomorrow afternoon after 2:30 p.m.
There are a lot of women out there, and men, I would think, too, that have a lot of questions. Fertility has become a problem for many, many people.
Absolutely. It's estimated 1 in 8 couples struggle with infertility, and some statistics suggest even more, upwards of maybe even 1 in 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anything that you can find that is contributing to that? Is it environmental? Is it...
I think that's a great question. I think it's multifactorial. I think there's an underlying probably genetic component. There is definitely a dietary nutrition component and definitely thought to be an environmental component as well.
That's pretty fascinating.
The most frustrating is with my wife and myself when we were having a hard time conceiving, they would test both of us and I tested fine and she tested fine and they said that's the worst possible scenario.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's tricky. There are a number of couples, maybe 30% or so, that fall into that unexplained category.
Right.
And while in some ways you don't want a diagnosis per se, you want to know why. And
right.
That's what couples struggle with. And I think it's partially due to limitations in our testing abilities.
Yeah.
We don't know if it's a fertilization issue or it's how the embryo travels down the fallopian tube or implantation in the uterus because we don't have the perfect test to always figure that out.
Yep.
Louise Brown, Louise Joy Brown is with us along with Elizabeth Jordan Carr. Do you remember your doctors? Obviously you do.
Yes. Yeah. For me, Doctors Howard and Georgiana Jones were in Virginia, and they were, you know, practically my grandparents. You know, every birthday, Christmas, would call me when I was applying to colleges. They both wanted to know exactly where I was going, what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was pregnant with my son, they were like, which hospital? Do they have a NICU? What's going on? You know, so, yeah, very involved.
And yeah. Louise?
Patrick Steptoe unfortunately died when I was 10. So we did keep in touch, and I used to go and see him. And like Elizabeth said, they're just like extra grandparents. They were so special. Bob Edwards was fantastic as well. He actually died in 2013, so I knew Bob a lot more than I knew Patrick. Keep in touch with the family. I speak to Patrick Steptoe's son. I speak to Bob Edwards' daughters. So yeah, we keep in touch, and it's a very special relationship.
Dr. Steptoe, much like yourself, became a household name. I mean, I remember him being on the covers of magazines, and it was such a revolutionary thing. Why did this take so long? Why was it until 39 years ago and 35 years ago for these procedures to have been successful?
Yeah, I mean, these are pioneers in the field. I mean, they really are. They're the physicians that took care of them really led the way. And back then, we didn't quite have the same technological advances that we do now.
Yeah.
And success rates were incredibly low. And maybe you would retrieve one or two eggs. And maybe fertilization rates would be under 50%. So success rates, these two women are true miracles and pioneers in the field.
Yeah. Do you feel like miracles? Does it feel... you don't feel like a miracle.
It's just business as usual
no,
for
this
you.
Is just, this is just our life.
Yeah.
Now, have you had conversations with your parents? Because I imagine, especially in your case, Louise, when you were the first in vitro fertilization in the world, were they scared? Were they... How did they feel about this whole process, as the doctor mentioned that it wasn't always successful?
Mum didn't know that it hadn't actually worked. She believed she was going to be pregnant. Patrick Steptoe was a gynecologist, so there were babies and parents going to and from. So Mum seen this and just assumed it had worked.
Right.
But she did truly believe that she would have a baby at the end of it. And she did. And I believe it was a one egg retrieval.
Wow.
Because that's what was available back.
Wow. So the odds were so far against this happening, and yet it happened.
Positive mental attitude.
Yeah.
What about in your case, Elizabeth? Did you talk to your parents about this? Were they scared? Were they skeptical?
You know, Mom always says that they were both blissfully unaware that they were going to be the first.
Yeah.
Because there was actually a group of 10 other patients that were down at the clinic in Virginia where I was born going through this regimen. And since it was unproven in the U.S., the doctors weren't sure which of the combinations of things were going to work. And so, you know, my mom and dad always said you were rooting for the other people as much as you were rooting for yourself.
Sure.
And you didn't want them to fail, but you wanted you to be successful. And, you know, they all had no idea who was going to hit the jackpot.
Yeah.
Dr. Amber Cooper, this question would go well for you. What has changed in the whole IVF thing? Because it seems to be more successful now than ever.
Yeah, many things have actually changed. We use more medications, so we push women's ovaries a little harder to retrieve a few more eggs. We're able to access those eggs and retrieve those eggs transvaginally instead of big laparoscopic surgeries that used to happen. And we have better techniques to help fertilization and improved the embryo culture system when we culture embryos out to the blastocyst stage. So we're able to actually have better success even with a single embryo transfer and minimize the risk of multiples.
Louise's procedure and Elizabeth's procedure were roughly 4 years apart.
Mm-hmm.
Did much change in those 4 years or not?
And not so much in those 4 years,
no.
A little bit, but it's been a lot more in the last probably 15 years or so. It's really taken off.
So what happened that 4 years passed? You would have thought, or I would have thought anyway, that once Louise's situation was a success, that here in America and all over the world, they'd be doing exactly whatever they could to make that happen over and over again.
I mean, that's a great question. I think Elizabeth, I learned today she was the 15th in
the
world.
Yeah.
So really, I mean, that's not very many deliveries in those years. But I think it was partially the success rates. It was access to clinics that were doing this.
Oh.
Because, you know, it really, there were not very many clinics in the world that were practicing in vitro fertilization.
That's why I was born in Virginia. It was illegal in Massachusetts where I'm from. And so my parents were traveling to and from Massachusetts down to Virginia just to have this procedure done because it wasn't legalized in a lot of states. Because people were saying,
why?
Playing God, designer babies, all this kind of
stuff.
There
were a lot of battles in many states at first,
absolutely,
weren't there?
Absolutely. And actually, there was a pretty substantial battle that Dr. Jones went through in Virginia just to get the clinic up and running. And really, you know, to your question of what took so long?
Yeah.
Money.
Mm-hmm. Is that what it came down
money.
To?
The only reason they opened the Jones Institute is because somebody asked Dr. Howard, what's it going to take for this to happen in the States? And he said, money.
Yeah.
And then the next day, an anonymous check showed up for just the amount of money it was going to take to open a clinic. Mm-hmm. And that's really why, you know, I'm here.
I have an 18-year-old neighbor and friend that has been battling cancer successfully at this point, but has had a lot of chemotherapy. And at 18, she has decided to get some eggs extracted and frozen. This is unheard of years ago, and now because of all this, that's pretty common as well, correct?
Correct. Even at our clinic, Vios Fertility Institute, we have an oncofertility program. You know, before, we were freezing embryos decades ago. Embryos are sort of a tight ball of small cells, but it was really the freezing techniques. It's called vitrification, which is an immediate glass-like state that really has changed the field for egg freezing, where one large cell can tolerate the freeze and thaw process.
Yeah.
It's changed the field for cancer patients as well, yes.
I'm still so hung up on the fact that Massachusetts made it this illegal. Is it, like, as of today, are there any of the 50 states where this is illegal? Because in Massachusetts, you can go to Fenway. There's a booth at Fenway where you can have this done now without a problem.
To get free tickets.
So it's not necessarily that it's illegal, but it's Massachusetts is one of the very first states in the U.S. that had really great insurance coverage, and it was fought for. And so if you go to different states, there's varying insurance coverage. So some states may have programs where it's covered by your insurance, and other states it's not covered, and it's entirely out of your pocket, and it's not cheap.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that a little bit. Dr. Cooper, it isn't cheap, as you mentioned, Elizabeth. If you don't have insurance, what could this cost?
Yeah, roughly average in the U.S., probably anywhere from $12,000 to $17,000 per cycle if you have no insurance coverage.
For one cycle.
Per cycle. Yes.
And it takes sometimes multiple cycles.
Yes.
I remember my wife was on a drug called Clomid, mm-hmm. right? And
yes.
And that cycle was very expensive, and the IVF was out of our league. Mm-hmm. We just couldn't come close to it. Insurance luckily covered a fairly decent part of it, but mm-hmm. boy, that for somebody who wants a child so badly and can't afford it, that's just devastating.
Absolutely. And there's very few states, as Elizabeth said, in the U.S. that actually have coverage that are what we call mandate states in the country. There's really only probably maybe four complete mandate states and maybe only a dozen or so partial mandate states. And by that means that if your employer has a large enough company that they actually do have to provide you infertility therapy coverage.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, there's a religious reason or there's a union or they opt out of it.
Louise, do you know, is it similar in England or is it different?
Yeah, it's very similar. A government in the UK fund a certain amount.
Yeah.
But in the UK, I think it's suggested that they should fund three rounds of it, because then that generally ends up as a success.
After three rounds.
But a lot of... a lot of places don't cover.
No.
So it's something that it needs to be dealt with.
Without a doubt.
Over the whole entire world, not just the UK, not just the US, but the whole entire world.
Why did it take so long for you guys to meet? Seriously.
I think we've been asking that our entire lives.
Yeah.
I would have thought you guys would have become pen pals when you could learn how to write.
We FaceTimed a few months ago. But I think it's also just been, you know, as much as you want to meet the other person, she's all the way across the world.
Right.
You know, it's not exactly easy.
But you got somewhere
to
stay when you want to go see
you. Do. But, you know, I mean, it's like we have lives, we have families, we have schedules, we have all, you know, it's amazing that it could all come together in Chicago. And if it wasn't for the MSRI conference, you know, we wouldn't be able to do this.
No. It was so moving to see them meet on stage.
I bet.
I think I looked around and everyone had tears in their eyes.
Including
Elizabeth, I know you have children. How many kids?
Just one.
and Louise, I don't know if you do or do not.
Yeah, I have two boys.
All right, so what have those conversations been like with your kids as you explain to them that you guys were just under such a spotlight when you were born?
My oldest is 10 years old, so he's doing sex education at school at the moment. And he used to wonder, why, Mummy, why are you in the paper? Why are you on TV? My friend saw you. So I just told him that Nanny needed help from Patrick Steptoe and Bob Edwards.
Oh, yeah?
To have me, and I've left it at that at the moment.
Yeah.
And my other son is only 2 and 3 and a half, so he's oblivious.
Nothing yet.
He'll have better questions when he gets to be 10. What about your children?
My 6-year-old, I have 1 6-year-old son, and he's very outgoing. So he has learned, he's very adept at saying, mom was the first IVF baby in the U.S., but he doesn't have any understanding of what that means, and he just says, you're gonna go be on TV again, or you're gonna go be on the cover of a magazine or whatever. Yeah. And so, it's totally normal for him too. It's very funny that it's totally normal for him.
They just adapt, don't they? Kids just adapt.
They do.
Very much.
Yeah.
And this may be too personal. Did you have your children through IVF or no?
No. So the only reason my mother had fertility issues was she actually had scar tissue from a botched appendix surgery. So her tubes were damaged. But other than that, she had no fertility issues. And so my fertility was never a question. So I had a completely normal, quote unquote, childbirth, other than the fact that the cameras were there to capture it as soon as I was done having my son.
That's where you don't want the cameras.
Yeah.
You really don't. And Louise?
I didn't have IVF. Mine were both natural. I'm not sure how mum had it, but mum's fallopian tubes were damaged. So that was why she couldn't conceive naturally. So I guess they were just waiting and watching to see if I could conceive naturally. And I did, so luckily.
Good. Very, very good.
I am completely honored to meet each of you, and you have just really paved the way for so many happy parents out there right now, and I can't thank you enough on behalf of them.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And tell us a little about the Midwest Reproductive Symposium International. It's happening tomorrow at the Drake Hotel, 140 East Walton Place. Questions will be answered. It's open to the public. Give us a little more information, Dr. Cooper.
Yeah, this is the Midwest Reproductive Symposium International. It's been going on for over a decade, and reproductive specialists and providers from all over the country and world come in for the meeting. So the scientific session is going on right now, today and tomorrow, but we are opening it to the public for public day after 2:30 p.m. tomorrow.
I bet people have a lot of questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is there a website we can send people to get information?
Yes, they can go to the MRSISymposium.com or just Google Midwest Reproductive Symposium. There's several websites that come up.
Very good. Ladies, thank you all for being here. We really appreciate it. We really do. We'll take a quick break. We've got news next and then more show coming your way after that. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.